Welcome to Straight Thinking, a GPS for the Christian mind, teaching you how to think, not what to think. This is Average Joe Aguirre with theologian and philosopher Kenneth Samples and physicist Dave Rogstad. On today's podcast, is it intolerant to claim Christianity alone is true? Ken will address that question today. And Ken, I don't think Christians want to appear as intolerant, but how do we approach this issue without sounding as though we are, in fact, intolerant?
Yeah, that's I think hits the question on the head there, Joe. You know, it seems that we live in a time that has given sensitivity to how ideas are presented, how worldviews are framed. And a lot of people are sensitive to the idea of maybe ideas being pushed upon them or religious views being pushed upon them. But I think while tolerance, and what I mean by tolerance is basically treating people with respect, you know, being respectful of their beliefs. And of course, that's what I call the golden rule of apologetics. I think we have a burden to treat other people's beliefs the way we want ours treated. That doesn't mean we affirm those beliefs, because they may very well be contradictory to ours. But I think what it does mean is to be fair-minded, to be accurate. I don't want to misrepresent what other people think. But while I think tolerance can be a virtue, not when it's separated from the issue of truth. So I want to unpackage this idea a little bit and give some of our listeners some ideas to think about, maybe incorporate when they talk with people about the faith.
Sounds good. We can use a good dose of that today, I think.
Well, we've talked about some of these ideas before, and I think it's important to kind of circle them back again because they are so relevant to our culture. I mentioned on a podcast before that I took a trip to Canada some years ago. I think it was to talk about one of my books. I'm not sure I know exactly which one it was. But I was told when I walked into the green room of a Christian program, they cautioned me about being too straightforward about the idea of Christianity being the one true religion. And I thought, oh, okay, that's an interesting thing to be met with. But they were actually very gracious. They said, look, in Canada, there are Christian programming that gets into trouble with Canadian law when they press the idea that Christianity is true and the other religions are false. And so the host later told me, you know, we got to try to be wise about how we maneuver that issue. We don't want to pay fines to the government, but nor do we want to compromise our perspective. It didn't help that in the back of my book, A World of Difference, it talks about the exclusive claims of Christianity.
Yeah, that's right.
But I tried to handle it by being respectful, but also kind of explaining why we have to arrive at some of these kinds of things. And you know, I'd like to.
In the end, and then would you say that you did make the claim that Christianity was the only true religion, or did you just not say one way or the other?
What I did with it is I tried to.
I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot or say you compromised. I mean, this is just a problem. How do you?
Yeah.
How do you deal with things like this?
What I tried to do is I tried to explain the Christian position, rather than coming out and saying Christianity is true and everybody else is false, which, by the way, isn't true. Everything in all the other religions isn't false. There is common grace. There is general revelation. What I did is I unpackaged it. I tried to say, here is why Christians can be viewed as being intolerant, because Jesus himself makes these kinds of claims. So I tried to disarm them by providing the reasoning process.
Right.
rather than preaching.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which, you didn't just proclaim.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Have you been invited back? That's the key question.
did they broadcast your program?
They did. They did. They told me it was one of the most popular ones. Oh. So, but they haven't invited me back. All right. So that might be a secret sign. One of the things that I want to begin as we talk about this idea is, so tolerance, I think, is being respectful of other people. I mean, I look at the religion of Judaism, and I have a lot of respect for Judaism. I think Jesus is the Jewish Messiah. I believe in their scriptures. I think Judaism and Christianity have a unique relationship. But traditional Judaism says Jesus is not the Son of God. So there are places where even the religions that have a lot in common, there's going to be a clash. And the traditional interpretation of Jesus wasn't very friendly. He was viewed in the ancient world as a blasphemer. I think today there are differing views. Maybe he was just a misguided good teacher, but he was misguided in some way. But my point here is I think we can be respectful, but truth always works its way in there. There are these issues of truth. And the funny thing about truth, the interesting thing, is that you can never get away from it, because even if you said there is no truth, well, that's a truth statement.
Yeah.
So you can't get away from this question of, is it true? And if a religious claim is true, how does it then relate to other particular truth claims?
So even if you say you can't know the truth, how do we know that that's true?
Well, that's right.
I mean, it's just
truth claims are very interesting, yeah. Because if you say nobody can know the truth,
right,
that's a
what,
truth you know.
Yeah, which is what people say today in the postmodern.
And it's really a rather self-defeating thing, because to say you know so much about truth that you say access is denied,
right,
is to know a lot about truth, right?
Yeah.
Right? So there is this kind of element, and I think that maybe that's the way to introduce this issue. You might say, you know, I believe in being tolerant. If you define tolerance as being respectful, not bullying people into ideas, I think trying to coerce people to believe something, I think the only kind of coercion you should use is the coercion of good reasoning, or the coercion of a gracious character, right?
Right?
But of course, what I mean by that is not coercion, but persuasion.
Right.
So I think we can begin by saying, look, I rightly understood and rightly defined, I believe in tolerance. And I regret that people have been treated intolerant by Christians. But remember, you can never separate tolerance from truth. And let's talk a little bit about truth in other ways. You know, one of the things I didn't like about studying mathematics when I was a kid is how intolerant it was. The teacher marked my answers wrong. Well, why can't my views of mathematics be just as good as anybody else's?
Well, right. We live in a postmodern era. Why can't we?
Why can't
accept
my
one another?
Why can't I just deny the laws of logic right and left? And why aren't you tolerant?
Yeah.
Truth has a critical place in this whole issue. And I think maybe that's a good place to begin. Instead of rejecting the idea of tolerance, say, you know what? If you define tolerance properly, I can accept it. I don't want to bully. I don't want to coerce. But I can't separate tolerance from truth claims. And that kind of leads us into Christianity. Because Christianity makes particular truth claims. I mean, Jesus himself says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me. That's a very powerful, one could say rather intolerant claim.
Rather arrogant.
Yeah, it's a bold, audacious type of claim. And it's not just Jesus who makes those claims. In the book of Acts, Peter says, neither is there salvation in any other religion,
no other
but Jesus
name.
Is the only way to God. So So Jesus Christ and historic Christianity took a very strong, not a pluralistic position, not an inclusivistic position, but an exclusive position. Now, let me kind of unpackage that a little bit. I think religions often have a lot of common ground. And what I suggest when you talk to people in other religions, that maybe you try to find a place you can have common ground. One of the religions that has a lot in common, and people will be surprised to hear me say this, but actually Christianity and Islam have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. They're both Middle Eastern religions. They both claim to go back to Abraham. They both claim that, they respect Jesus. Of course, there's a lot of areas in which they disagree, obviously. But here is an interesting point. Christianity makes a claim that really conflicts with the Islamic claim. Historic Christianity makes the claim that Jesus is God incarnate. I mean, think about that for a minute. I don't think there's any other religion that makes that kind of claim. Now, it's true that in Hinduism you have an avatar. That's an appearance of a divine figure in the world. But that's different than the incarnation, I think, in a couple different ways. Avatars can appear in human form or animal form. It happens all the time. Rather than the incarnation that is a one-of-a-kind enfleshment, the second person of the Trinity takes to himself a human nature and becomes man. But this is a powerful claim. And it's a powerful claim in many ways. I mean, skeptics say there's the hiddenness of God. Why doesn't God just come out and reveal himself? Well, in a sense, God has entered into human history, mm-hmm. taken human nature and lived as a man. I like to talk about the Earth being the visited planet, but let's get into the logic and this question of truth and tolerance, if you will. So the statement of historic Christianity is that Jesus is God incarnate. But if you relate it to Islam, and by the way, traditional Judaism, they both say he's not God incarnate.
So they're intolerant.
Well, anybody who disagrees with one another is going to have to bear that issue of being tolerant or intolerant.
Right.
And Islam, of course, gets a lot of blame for being intolerant.
Yeah.
But let's look at those two statements. Jesus is God incarnate. That's the Christian position. The Muslim and Jewish position, traditional Judaism. Now, there are Messianic Jews who I think are culturally Jewish and theologically Christian. But by the way, I read in a magazine, World Magazine, I think last year, that said the group within Judaism that is growing the fastest is the Messianic tradition,
wow.
which surprised me. I hope that's the case. I respect the work that they do. But traditional Judaism still asserts that Jesus, whoever he is, whether he's a good teacher, whether he's misguided, or whether he was a blasphemer, he's not God incarnate. And the Muslim claim is that Jesus was a holy figure. Jesus did miracles, but Jesus was a prophet of Allah, but there was one thing Jesus wasn't. He wasn't God incarnate. So here is that clash of ideas, and that's where, when you get into fields like mathematics and logic, you have conflict. I mean, if it's true that Jesus is God incarnate, that means that the Jewish and the Muslim position about the identity of Jesus is false. So when you get into fields where you have truth claims, you can't get away from the clash of true and false. You know, and of course, I would say the same thing in reverse. If it's true that Jesus is not God incarnate, then historic Christianity is false, because this isn't just one doctrine among many. It seems to me that the doctrine of the incarnation is right at the core of what historic Christians believe. I mean, it's the official position of the Roman Catholic tradition, the Eastern Orthodox tradition, the conservative Protestants affirm this. Jesus being God in human flesh is in some ways the incarnation provides the prism for the atonement. Because Jesus is God and man, he can do what he claimed to do. He can reconcile God and man.
And this is why you said at the beginning, for people who might be new to the podcast, that truth and tolerance go hand in hand. This comes to bear on this doctrine right here.
That's exactly right. I'm all for an appropriate use of tolerance. I want to talk a little bit about ways I think Christians have historically been less than tolerant. And so I think the idea of having a table where people are invited to the table, I personally think the university should be a place where people can present all kinds of claims, controversial, contradictory, even immoral claims. But if you get an invitation to the table and you make a claim, we get to critique you, and you got to back it up. If a Nazi wants to come and make a presentation at the local university, I'd let him. And I would relish the opportunity to critique that position. If a communist wants to do it, I'd invite him.
But now in the university, they, in many cases, they won't allow that. They won't allow the students, or I think it's the students is where it all comes from. They won't allow the...
A lot of times they think the Christian position is the Nazi position, or the Christian position is a totalitarian
position. But I'm just thinking of any of these controversial figures. They won't allow a communist
And that's where I think there is such a profound difference between education and propaganda.
That's right.
I think our educational institutions, you know what? If you can make any controversial point you want, but remember, we get to critique.
Right.
My son, when he was attending a community college not too far from where I live, he took a speech class. And so he came home and said, "Dad, I got to give a couple speeches. You know, what do you think?" And so I gave him some ideas, and all of the topics that I presented, abortion, Christianity being the one true religion, they were all issues he couldn't address. They were told, "Nope, those are off the table. They're too controversial." And I thought, my goodness, why? You know, let the controversy flow. Well, we live at a time where there are people who express a lot of sensitivity about tolerance, but sometimes in the name of tolerance, people are intolerant. And I think Christianity does well in a free market idea context. Now, let me come back again to this idea. So you can't separate truth from tolerance, but even in the religions that have the most in common with Christianity, Judaism and Islam, when we get right down to the details of the Christian faith, so issues like the incarnation and like the Trinity, that's where even Jews and Muslims have to say, we strongly disagree over that. And there's no way of getting around. I mean, if we focus on the incarnation, Jesus is God incarnate for the Christian. Jesus is not God incarnate for the traditional Jew and the Muslim. The problem is that those two statements contradict one another. The law of non-contradiction says that in a contradictory situation, both of them cannot be true. So they negate each other. They're opposites. And so here at the religions that have the most in common, there's a clash of ideas. And I could even go further in logic than that. Not only are those two statements contradictory, but I could say not both are true, but I would say one is true and the other is false, because Jesus either is God incarnate or he isn't. There isn't any middle position. So I would say somebody is wrong. And that I don't think violates any reasonable standards of tolerance. Just like in mathematics, just like in objective areas, when ideas clash, I mean, think of science for a minute. They talk a lot about falsifying views. They talk about, oh, those old views, we don't hold those anymore. They're out of vogue. We've shown that they don't carry the ring of truth. So it may be interesting, I think, and I wonder for our listeners, because, you know, we have a good number of people who are engineers and in the STEM disciplines, right? They may be more troubled by this idea because their training has been very objective. But if you move to the social sciences have been deeply influenced by this idea, not only of tolerance, but also relativism in the area of truth. I mean, postmodernism says everybody has an agenda. And part of the problem with the past is that people have made these bold, audacious truth claims that they couldn't really back up. So now people are rather suspicious if you make a bold claim. But what I suggest people do, my Christian friends, when they want to talk with others, is to take them back to Jesus, take them back to historic Christianity, begin to unpackage these things. I mean, the Muslims and the Jews look at Jesus one way, Christians look at him in another. They can't both be true, and the laws of logic would indicate one is true and the other one is false. And at that point, I don't think that there's anything that we can do. I don't think we should suspend truth just to carry on tolerance. I think what you could say is, look, this is an obvious area where you and I disagree. And it's a critical area. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to badmouth you. It doesn't mean that I'm going to treat you badly. And it certainly doesn't mean that I'm going to try to force you against your will to accept what I think. Number one, I don't think that ever works. And I, being from the Augustinian tradition, I believe God has to do a work in a person's heart to be convinced. I don't think it's purely a rational, I don't think conversion is a purely rational phenomenon. I think there has to be a new birth. There has to be a spiritual birth. So, tolerance can be a good virtue if it's defined carefully. We shouldn't separate the virtue of truth from tolerance or tolerance from truth. But I think we also have to recognize that we can make an apologetic case for the truth of Christianity. And again, this comes back to the golden rule of apologetics. I think that what I want to do when I engage in apologetics, I think I probably want to do three things. I want to make a solid case for the truth of the Christian faith. That is, to use Aristotle, I want to present a logical case. The case I make may depend on the circumstance. Mm-hmm. With a Muslim and a Jew, I may want to make a theological case. For a skeptic, I may want to make a philosophical case. So it may differ, but I may want to talk about the truth of historic Christianity, the uniqueness of Jesus. I may want to talk about the existence of God. I may want to talk about the Christian worldview providing the best explanation. But I also want to kind of present a code of conduct. Mm-hmm. And that code of conduct is, again, look, if I've misrepresented your view, please correct me. In fact, I have found, and I wonder how many of our listeners can relate to this, a lot of times when I'm talking to people, I'm only partially listening. I'm waiting until they stop talking so I can talk. And that gets you into trouble, but one thing that's helped me not commit a straw man fallacy, a straw man, is where you misrepresent your opponent's argument, usually by making it look more extreme so you can get rid of it And of course, more extreme positions are easy to handle. Mm. Just like a straw man is easier to knock down than a man of bone and muscle. Well, one of the things that helps me not commit a straw man is if I say to them, now, Dave, I think this is your argument. Let me repeat it to you and see if you agree that I'm getting your argument right. Seems like you're making this claim, and you are appealing to these points to support that claim. Is that right? Now, what happens when I do that often is people actually are impressed, that because they're under the impression that, hey, I'm not listening to what Ken says. I'm just going to start talking when he stops. So I want to try to provide a code of conduct.
Or start talking over him is what you frequently find today.
That's exactly right. And, so those are kind of some of the things that I think go into this. And we can make a case. We can make a strong presentation about the uniqueness of Christianity, the uniqueness of Jesus. I think Peter talks about gentleness, respect, keeping a clear conscience. And we can also recognize that the apostles were also into dismantling arguments that went against the Christian position. That is, as we think about this tolerance issue, we can begin to say, now, I want to tell you why I think that other position can't be correct. Here are the problems that I think are with that position. So, that's the way I tried to do it on this Canadian interview. I tried to say, rather than coming out and saying, you live in a totalitarian country, you can't even claim Christianity is true, I tried to respect the fact that these Christians were in kind of a tight spot. They had been cautioned about this, and they live in Canada. I don't. I live in America. I didn't want to go in there and get them into trouble, right. But I thought the way to do it was to say, now, given logic and given contradictions and given that positions are faulty, why wouldn't you affirm one to be true rather than the other? I actually think we live in a time now where we have to explain things like truth and logic and rationality.
If you're given the opportunity, as I said earlier, sometimes we find people are just talking over you rather than listening to you. I have a question. There are times when I listen to a person talk. I mean, you said earlier that in the academic environment, we want to invite anyone to the table, providing, we have the freedom to critique them.
Yeah.
But do you think there's ever a time when a person is representing a view that shouldn't be given an opportunity at the table?
Well, I guess it would depend on what table we're talking about. Personally, I think at a university, it's very good for students to be exposed to different ideas, quite frankly, even ideas that we might think to be dangerous or controversial.
Or immoral.
Or even immoral.
Or terribly disrespectful. I mean, maybe a person who wants to present their views presents them in a way that you just think, I don't want to give this person a venue for them to express their...
Yeah,
I don't know. Do you think there's ever...
Well, let me answer your question this way, Dave. I think I would rather err on allowing free speech than being guilty of denying free speech. You know, if a person wants to present a racist position, I would say, go ahead. But realize I'm going to listen to everything you say, and I'm going to go right after it. And then I'm going to make a case for how your view should be viewed in light of truth and morality and these kinds of things. My tendency, Dave, is I think the scientific community, I think that sometimes they make a mistake in not allowing the young earth position to have a seat at the table. Sometimes it's even historic, the biblical position, historic Christian mm-hmm. position. I know there's a context of wanting to protect the method of doing science, the integrity of science. I recognize that. I appreciate that. I think, though, the problem that I have is sometimes people who want to correct bias and presuppositions don't realize they have their own. You know, naturalists, atheists, skeptics sometimes are under the impression that they're just neutral. They have no stake in the game at all. My tendency, and there might be a case where I'll say, look, that person has such a loathsome position that I think how they present it may be wrong. But quite frankly, I think they ought to allow communist positions, Nazi positions. And I think people should get up there and critique them and talk about, well, let me introduce you to the Second World War. Let me introduce you to the totalitarian philosophies that murdered millions of people. My tendency is to think that a college education is a time not to be taught what to think, but generally how, and to come to a judgment that can be made. That's my take. You know, that's kind of how I approach it.
What I have in mind when I ask the question is, you know, I have children or grandchildren, and I have to confess I'm rather reluctant to just send them off to a university environment that I know is going to be very biased in its in the positions represented by the professors in the university. So they're going to go there and get indoctrinated into positions that I think are totally wrong. So it's not a kind of a free environment where a conservative position, for instance, is adequately represented. I think surveys have shown that the number of university professors in the average university who are conservative is either non-existent or is so small that position is not represented.
Well, I think you've raised a very legitimate issue, and I personally think that at the university and college level in our country, there are serious issues to be raised about whether you go to college to learn how to think or you go to college to be coerced into what to think.
Right.
And it happens at some of our best universities. Now, you know, to give you my own experience, the first two philosophy professors I had, they would not tell you what they thought. They'll tell you what Plato thought. They'll tell you what Aristotle thought. They'd tell you what St. Augustine thought. They would tell you what Wittgenstein, what Nietzsche thought. They would never tell me what they thought. Now, I appreciated that, and they were very careful in the way they presented the ideas, and I came to know both of them, got to know them, and they came from that school that teaching was never a place for you to present your own ideas. That you taught the content, you let the student work through. When I started teaching at the same college, I took a little bit of a different position than they took. I would never talk about my own beliefs in class. Any time that I would talk about something I affirmed, I would present the opposite. So if I gave an argument for the existence of God, I would give an argument for the non-existence of God. If I gave an argument for the uniqueness of Christianity, I'd present an argument to critique it. But here's where I differ. If the students asked me privately, I would tell them I was a Christian. And inevitably, they would. They would come to me and say, you know, I Googled your name, or, you know, I came across a book by you. And they would often say, Some of them would ask me in class. Some of them would ask me afterwards. Usually there's a line of students after the final, and they would say, why Jesus, not Krishna? Why Jesus, not Muhammad? And it was at Cerritos College, which is a public college, very diverse neighborhood. So I had Hindus, Buddhists, lots of skeptics. That was a position I took, but I would never grade them or evaluate them based upon my own ideas.
Yeah, well, you're probably unique. Or
I do know that there were very different positions taken, right, particularly among people on the social science faculty. And they took the position that, look, you've been taught all kinds of false things your whole life. I'm here to set you free.
Give you the truth.
Well, that's right. One point I want to come back to is I also want people to appreciate that not only does Jesus make exclusive claims, not only do the apostles make exclusive claims, but the apostles also critique other people's positions. They talk about other views of Jesus. I'm thinking here of 1 John 4:1-3, where John talks about there are these false doctrines that have gone out and deceived many people. So part of this evaluation is showing that there is often clash when it comes to truth claims, but also making a positive argument and showing that, anytime you enter into the world of ideas, you're going to bump into people. You're going to bump into differing ideas. Now, let me move to another point here, and I do think it's important. I think we should admit that there have been times in Christian history when particular groups that may have been in the majority and may have said to have represented Christianity have either been personally or corporately, intolerant. I watched a movie the other night. It was a very interesting film. It was called The Resistance Banker. True story. Some Dutchmen in German-occupied Netherlands basically created a shadow bank, took all the money to promote the resistance against the Nazis and to get people out of the country, and they came up with $100 million and were carrying on all these things. Remarkable time, remarkable courage, where people put their lives and the lives of their family in danger to protect often people they didn't even know. And I ask myself, courage is a very important virtue to me. I don't want to go through my life and discover that I'm a coward. And I thought to myself, could I put my life in danger to protect the Jewish community? Could I put my family's life in danger to protect people that I don't even know? Well, quite frankly, there have been times where Christianity has been in the minority, and those societies, I don't think, have done enough to show respectful treatment of other people. Quite frankly, I don't understand anti-Semitism. I think anti-Semitism, quite frankly, I think racism is irrational, not just immoral. I think it's irrational. In fact, I would ask this question. Is our prejudices, because I think we all have prejudice means to prejudge, right? Is our prejudice, is it due to our fallenness or our finiteness? I'm going to use a very particular example. My mother, I don't think she ever had a racist bone in her body. My mother was taught pretty well as a young girl about God loves all colors of people. All people are God's children. And my mother believed that, and she believed it into her 80s when she died. But when my mother moved from Clay County, West Virginia to Los Angeles, California, she encountered diverse ethnicities she had never seen before. Joe, my mother told me that she was 35 before she ever saw a Hispanic person. 35!
She missed out on some great food.
She, by the way, said that tacos immediately became her favorite. She was telling all the relatives, you got to have these tacos. Well, here's my point. Could it be that there are times we're uncomfortable with things we're not used to? That is, maybe part of our prejudice is our finiteness. We don't know a lot of things. There are a lot of things we're not...
Lack of experience.
We have lack of experience. We have lack of knowledge. I'm uncomfortable by that. I've never had that experience before. So part of it could be our finitude. That is... I also want to try to help and understand and try to get people to move away from that. What my mother began to experience, though, was that the diversity of ethnicities actually enhanced her life. So it could be partly our finitude. It could also be our fallenness, right? Very quickly. But there have been times in Christian society where Christians, I think, have not handled it well. I think anti-Semitism is one. Now again, whether you can say that society represented the historic Christian view, I doubt it. But there have been times where even religious people and even people who claim the claim of Christ, I think, have been less than respectful. Mm. And this kind of, again, goes back to this very important point that if people are made in the image of God, then they have inherent dignity and moral worth.
Yeah. Ken, I have a question, and you probably are getting to it, but I'll ask it anyway. I know you've been to the Museum of Tolerance here
yes.
in Los Angeles.
Recommend it.
Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. as well. When it comes to perceived intolerance on the part of people and even Christians in the past, some people might say, yeah, I hear what you're saying about truth being intolerant, but where does a loving attitude come into play? That is, if you're at a museum like that, I don't think you want to jump into, well, here's why Christianity is true and all other religions are false. How do we establish that, you know, we want to have a relationship with somebody who may have been hurt or could be perceived hurts or actual ones. So how do you go about that?
No, I think I think you make a great point, Joe. And I, you know, even though I don't always model it, and even though I fall down on this area, I think love is indispensable. Even if I can make a logical claim that's airtight, I don't want to do it if I'm going to trample over people doing it. There are people who have been hurt. There are people who have been discriminated. I mean, if you've been discriminated against, if you felt the sting of discrimination, it hurts. I mean, let's think about that for a moment. Think about the Jewish community that thought, I'm within a continent where I'm seen as an outsider, and now there is a government that has state policy to take away all my goods and then finally to exterminate me. I mean, maybe one of the reasons why Jews don't find it easy to assimilate is they feel like they can't trust anybody. Let's talk about blacks for a moment, if we might. I mean, imagine being viewed as a piece of property. Imagine being viewed that you don't fit here, or let's go up to segregation and Jim Crow, where there are bathrooms for blacks and bathrooms for whites. I was watching a television program just a week ago, and they used to have the Green Book. That was a book that all blacks knew, that in traveling around America, what cities to avoid, because they weren't friendly to black people. I mean, imagine that. Imagine feeling like nobody wants you. They're against you. There's a lot of pain in that, and I don't want to be cavalier. I want to make the case that you can't separate tolerance from truth. I want to make the case for historic Christianity. But I also want to convey to people that, you know what, I'm really sorry that you've been hurt. And I don't want to bruise you. I want to say that I think it's the biblical view of human beings that really made society reject slavery. And I think racism is a serious sin of not recognizing there is no superior race. There's only the human race. And that race is both good and wretched. That race has many fine qualities, but is also broken. Again, I don't, you know, I'm 60 years old. There are times where I think, what have I done with my life? When I get ready to die, how am I going to be evaluated? What will people say about me when I'm not here? I really do hope people will say, you know, Ken was a tender guy. He was a gracious guy. He was a lover. And I think that's very important. I think that's why I went to the Holocaust Museum, not in Los Angeles, which is called the Museum of Tolerance. I want to circle back to that in just a moment. But my son and I were in Washington, D.C. and went to the Holocaust Museum. And lo and behold, it was the time where they were honoring the infantry divisions in the American Army that had liberated various camps. So I was able to take my son and say, that was your grandfather's division that liberated a camp. And I was very proud that they had recognized that there were people in there who stopped the Holocaust. And, you know, that's what I said to my dad when my dad expressed concern with all the killing that he had been involved in the Second World War. I said, Dad, you helped stop the Holocaust. That's something that's on your resume. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you another story. I was at the Museum of Tolerance in Los Angeles. They had a large board, and they had pins on the board, and the pins represented places where you had white racist groups. And
in the United States?
In the United States. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I was there with a number of my students. So I raised my hand and I said, now I realize that, you know, white racism is a very serious issue, particularly with groups like the Ku Klux Klan and various other groups. I said, do you track groups that have racist views that are not white? And the lady, she was kind of flabbergasted. And I said, because it kind of gives me the impression that only white people have racial prejudice. To her, I respected her because she said, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question before. Of course, now some people would come back and say only whites can be racist. They have the power. They have the privilege, right? These ideas, I think, have to be looked at and evaluated very carefully. I think the way to address questions of race and prejudice is to have a very honest and thoughtful dialogue and challenge assumptions. I certainly recognize that white people in the world, Caucasians, have at times treated non-Caucasians very badly, but I don't think racism is something that is merely true of any particular group. We're all fallen. We're all broken.
I grew up in a mixed neighborhood, and
mathematicians and non-mathematicians?
No, yeah. No, this is Hispanic, black. You know, the schools I went to were mixed. And I got beat up equally by white people and black people and Mexicans.
They were equal.
I've got some scars that
bullying
stitches
was
that I had to have. Yeah, but bullying
is an equal opportunity
is an equal
employer.
Opportunity experience. Oh, that's right. And I think probably if I had not grown up in a Christian home where I had been taught the things that you expressed a little earlier, I might have developed prejudice against some of these different groups. But, you know, you find out that there's good people and there's bad people, you know, in any of these areas. And right now I'm part of a church that's a mixed church. And we have a wonderful time together because, you know, the skin, the color of the skin matters not at all.
It enriches you.
It enriches you.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Well, I want to close our program by appealing to the gospel again. God created people in his image, and it is that theological teaching, that biblical doctrinal teaching, that then implies that people have inherent dignity and moral worth, and that we ought to emphasize that human beings, Jesus takes our humanity. That tells us that there is something good about human nature. Being a human being is not a bad thing. It's a good thing, but we are broken and fallen, need a savior. But we also, I think, need to recognize, I mean, I live in a world of ideas, and I like that world. I'm used to it. I'm familiar with it. But what's harder for me is to put my Christian value system to work. And it may mean that when we talk about controversial issues like tolerance, like political correctness, like some of these issues we've been talking about that are part of the American zeitgeist, the spirit of the age, if you will, it may mean that we have to have some patience. It may mean that we will have to recognize that this isn't going to be resolved quickly or easily, and we need to put our best face forward. If some mean Christians have made Christianity look bad, maybe some gracious, loving Christians can make it look good. And yeah. And I will just simply close by saying this. I believe we're saved by grace, not by works. If I believe that salvation is a gift of grace, I think I have an obligation to try to be gracious to people. Because essentially what I'm saying is the most important thing in life is the grace of God. And if I am at odds with that, then I'm in trouble. It's not easy. It's not easy to be a gracious, loving person. Read 1 Corinthians 13. Reflect on it very carefully. I can't do that in full measure. That's why I need a Savior. But I do think that those of us who believe deeply in grace need to recognize that a consistent life is a life that strives for that.
Hmm. All right. Great stuff, Ken. Thank you very much. Did you mention that you've written on this topic in
yes, let one me of your books? Let me mention a couple. I certainly have a blog article called "Is It Intolerant to Claim Christianity Alone Is True," which you can get at Reflections by Ken. But I've also written on this topic in my book Without a Doubt, and I also touch upon these kinds of issues and 7 truths that changed the world.
All right. There's your reading material. Thank you for listening to this podcast. For Ken Samples and Dave Rogstad, this is Joe Aguirre with a reminder that the goal of apologetics is not victory but truth. Thanks for listening, and join us for the next edition of Straight Thinking.
Thank you for listening. Your prayers and financial support are reaching people with reasons for faith in Jesus Christ, our Creator and Savior. To allow Reasons to Believe programs like this to continue, make your gift today at reasons.org.